the scenes of Kansas State athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus, making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
K-State Nation, what is going on, everybody? This is another episode of the Purple Project Podcast, weekly edition, episode 59. And we're recording this on Hall of Fame weekend, Sunday, August 8th, 2021, and ever so closely to action on the gridiron down in Arlington. The countdown continues to the All-State Kickoff Classic, K-State against Stanford. Eddie Greer III here for the Purple Project Podcast. I'll bring on my co-host in just a moment. This is the weekly edition of the podcast, of course, episode 59, already here for Triple P. And of course, you can find the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, of course, Spotify, we're on that, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and more. The Purple Project Podcast getting ready for some fall sports, and finally everything kicking in, about to kick in gear here, beginning this Thursday with a little soccer action here. But nonetheless, we got a packed show. I'm gonna bring on my co-host. If you're new to the podcast, of course, I host the podcast, and of course daily editions that you can find on the feed as well. Alex Aiden out there in San Diego, California. Alex, what's happening out there?
Not too much happening out here, Eddie, for me. I was just watching the closing ceremonies for the Olympics before we jumped on the podcast, and watching a little bit of the Olympics, watching the U.S. men's win gold and the U.S. women's win gold in basketball. This past weekend, Friday night, Saturday night. So that was good to see. For me, I bought a new car this weekend, Eddie. So there was something.
Oh, I didn't see that.
There was something I did. Woohoo!
I didn't see that.
Exciting and scary jump of buying a newer car. But the K-State realm. All's good, Eddie. You know, we're close to getting football back, volleyball back, the other sports band. A lot going on. First off, I just want to say congrats to Gene Taylor for being selected to the college football playoff committee. That was really cool to see. That was really cool to see that he got named to that committee, because Christo Conte was the Texas had to step down, because there's clearly a bit of an issue there, because I
of course,
hard to justify him having the best interest for the Big 12 when they're leaving the Big 12. So
yeah, makes sense. That makes sense. Rep. Yeah.
So I think it's really good for K-State that Gene Taylor was named that, because it means that people look at K-State in a relatively high regard, and Gene Taylor in a relatively high regard. So you know, I think that's good. Good to see, and good to have. And then, you know, obviously, you know, all the realignment talks continue. They've slowed down a little bit, but they definitely still continue and swirl. I know the Bob Bowlsby met with the Pac-12 athletic director for about 6 hours this last week. So, you know, fingers crossed that something could come of that. I think that would be the best case scenario for all eight teams in the Big 12, if there was some sort of, you know, some sort of scheduling alliance or some sort of TV deal that those two conferences could make happen together, or even some type of merger. So that was encouraging, and you know, still way down the line. But good to see at least the Big 12 being proactive and taking their shot. And in the meantime, you know, KU's doing everything they can to weasel out of the conference and get to the Big Ten. So, Eddie, I didn't know if you knew this, but KU is a suburb of Kansas City. This was news to me as a born and raised Kansas Cityan. That was news to me when KU told me that they were a suburb of Kansas City. I was like, huh.
Hmm.
Interesting. Okay, I didn't know that 45 minutes out of the city meant that you're a suburb of Kansas City. But, oh, thank you. Thank you for the newsflash, KU. So, by the way, people, KU is more of a suburb of Topeka than Kansas City. John Kurt said that, and I second that, being from Kansas City. That is an utter joke that KU is trying to... KU posted, for people who don't know what I'm talking about, they posted on their Twitter this whole, like, this whole post that was just clearly, like, Big 12, Big 10, please come get us, written all over that post. But they were like, you know, KU, a suburb of Kansas City, blah, 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 blah. You're talking about all this Kansas City stuff, and it's like, bro, like, stop it. Just stop. Go back to your cornfields in Lawrence and shush, okay? You're not part of Kansas City. Like, stop it. So, you know, KU's trying to take their shot, and, you know, good for them. You know, try to go get to the Big Ten, but, you know, Eddie, their fans are so delusional, it just baffles my mind. It just completely baffles my mind. At least K-State fans are like, yeah, look, we'd be screwed if the conference blew it up. I mean, at least K-State fans are relatively honest about it, but KU fans are just, their egos are so damn big. They just think that they could just go wherever, whenever, and they literally have maybe the worst program in Power 5 history in football. So, it's just ironic. The egos of the school 84 miles down I-70, they got some pretty big heads. I'm surprised they can walk through doors around there. They got some big old heads over there. But yeah, you know, I think that the best thing for everyone is going to be sports. Sports getting back. And, you know, people can stop. You know, don't have to constantly be living in the sphere. You know, they'll be able to talk about football again and breaking down positions again, which, you know, I know we're going to get into football again today. And John Kurtz on the game was reading some anonymous quotes from Big 12 coaches, kind of about what they thought of K-State. I can't remember who published those anonymous quotes, but really the general consensus I got from it, from the quotes I heard, was that the coaches think that COVID affected K-State a lot last year. Losing Skyler affected K-State a lot last year. They think Deuce is a beast. They think Skyler's really good. And they are pretty iffy about K-State's defense. So they pretty much share about what I feel about K-State as well. So I think that they feel the same way. But it was nice to see, you know, and see and hear some of the Big 12 coaches kind of acknowledge that, hey, you know, we're aware that we didn't see K-State at their best last year. And, you know, but at the same time, they didn't necessarily sound like they were afraid of K-State either. So, you know, pretty much what you would expect from them. But it was interesting. It was interesting to kind of hear them open up a little bit when you can kind of take the name off of the coaches, you know, off the coach. They can be a little more honest about how they feel. So it was interesting to hear kind of some of their takes on it. But yeah, so, you know, we'll dive into it, especially, you know, get into the defense today, which, you know, I do think will probably be one of the weakness of this team. I don't have terribly high expectations for this defense, but you never know. You never know what could happen. You know, one of the coaches, and we're going to talk about the defensive line in particular today, one of those coaches was talking about K-State and how they're really going to have trouble filling the shoes of Wyatt Hubert this year on that defensive line, on that defensive front seven. So that's something we'll dive into today. But to give you guys a little teaser, I share the same fear. I share the same fear that K-State's gonna, you know, defensive end, they may have some issues there. But like I said, excited to dive into that with you, Eddie, and get into the defense, and get into all the other things going on around K-State.
Yeah, and that's I do find that interesting there about that Lawrence, the whole deal there. So, yeah, 45 minutes out from KC. Yeah, I don't see it, but whatever.
As being generous, by the way, 45 minutes KC. If you're going to Johnson County, if you're actually going to Kansas City in the Missouri side, oh, it's definitely at least an hour, if not more. So, you know, but of course, Eddie, you drive over an hour in a suburb. I mean, you know, because Kansas City is LA, right? I mean, it's the same thing.
Yeah, LA's bigger, but KC, yeah, that definitely has its share of adventures. But yeah, absolutely. But yeah, we've talked about the offense quite a bit on this podcast, especially this summer, as the summer's quickly drawing to a close. As students getting ready, you got faculty slowly crawling into the Little Apple here. Orientation start this week. I know I have a couple of friends that are doing that or getting prepared to do that as well. So action is about to pick up. Get construction around here. Still not quite done. So that is going to be very interesting. Like it is every year here in Manhattan, Kansas. So
they need to get it done, Eddie. They need to get it done by the time the students get back.
I don't think it's going to get done, but this, so that's going to be in. Looks like a part of, I want to say Kimball. I know they had it down. Part of it had it down to one lane. They're doing something with it, but yeah, that's going to be very interesting. Obviously, the home opener, K-State's home opener, is the week after the big showdown with Stanford, which is going to be the biggest game in the Chris Klieman era. We've talked about that already on this podcast as well. So, man, oh man, anticipation is starting to build up here around here and around K-State Nation. We'll get to the defense momentarily. I do want to switch gears real quickly and talk about the new addition to Suzy Fritz's team, volleyball team, was added on Friday afternoon or Friday morning. Suzy Fritz, head coach of the volleyball team, announced officially the addition of Jacksonville transfer middle blocker Sydney Boulding to the Wildcats roster this past Friday. And Boulding has a size of 6'5". She's from Pickens, South Carolina, comes to K-State after two seasons at Jacksonville, where she amassed 344 career kills while hitting an average of 0.353 to go with a total of 135 blocks. Listed as a junior, of course, Boulding possesses three seasons of eligibility due to the NCAA's COVID-19 eligibility policy. So there that is again. So Sydney's going to get that extra year there to possibly compete for K-State. So, and then Fritz commented on the addition here saying, quote, "We are hoping to add experience, athleticism, size, and depth at the middle blocker position for next season," which is coming up very, very soon, actually, for Suzy, Coach Suzy. "We are excited about Sydney's ability to meet all those perimeters. She has made steady progress and had a great deal of success throughout her first two collegiate seasons. We feel as though she is just beginning to realize her potential as an athlete, and her best volleyball is ahead of her. Sydney has the capacity to improve our offense production in a significant way with her ability to generate kill production. We look forward to her impact on our team's success," in quote, as well. And Boulding has a impressive resume of her own here. She was ASUN Player of the Week back on March 22nd there. And she was Player of the Week also. She was Player of the Week honor mark for the first time in that Jacksonville program's history. Yeah, go back to 2017 as well. In her sophomore season, she produced 121 kills. That was good for second best on her team. 45 total blocks, ranked in the top 10 of the A-Sun Conference, while her 13 solo blocks were tops in the league as well. And then, of course, the list here goes on for K-State volleyball here. Boulding joins setter Josie, I'm probably going to butcher her last name, but I'm going to roll with it, Josie Habib, defensive specialist libero Molly Ramsey, defensive specialist and libero Jaden Vansborg, and transfer opposite Haley Warner as part of this year's 2021 class there as well. And this also comes with last year's newcomers as well for K-State, that which includes the impressive freshman, now sophomore, Aaliyah Carter, Kaylee Fernholtz, Tessa Matty, Mackenzie Morris, and Jaden Nimhard, who we talked about sparingly on this podcast last fall as well. So Suzy Fritz checks marks a huge need, Alex. in that for her team. And of course, last year, K-State volleyball finishing third, highest finishing in quite some time for this volleyball team, and they got a lot of momentum here going into their fall schedule. Like I got talked about early on in the Pro Project Daily this week here. So switch tabs real quick here. Volleyball begins their season a couple weeks from tomorrow. They're gonna be hosting Kansas City August 21st. That's right around the corner, Alex. I don't know if you have any more thoughts on that move, but just in general, this volleyball team got a lot of momentum last year, obviously, and adding more depth. Susie Fritz has accomplished that, and they're going here, hopefully, to challenge, get a couple more spots closer to the top of the Big 12.
Absolutely. You know, I think you hit it kind of the nail right on the head there, Eddie, is that, you know, this is a step that's just going to help K-State continue, like you said, get near the top of the Big 12. It's going to give them more production potentially, really, in all aspects of kind of what they're doing, you know, particularly at, like, with the mid-blocker area. And so that's going to be huge. She's going to be able to address multiple needs that were on that volleyball team and also give them a little more depth as well. There's no doubt that it's going to be a big get for them. And, you know, the season is right around the corner, as you mentioned, so we'll see kind of, you know, how quickly, you know, she can kind of get intertwined with the team and, you know, gelling with them. But no doubt that it's, you would assume that it would help them in the long term, it's a long season, and can really help them compete on the top half of the Big 12, which we have grown accustomed to with K-State volleyball. We've grown accustomed with them competing on the top half of the Big 12 year in and year out. And this is just another move that's going to help them be able to sustain that success that they've really had, you know, in volleyball. And, you know, eager to, you know, see what she can do in the Wildcat uniform, eager to see what the volleyball team can do, how competitive they can be. And ultimately, I think it's good for them, and it's just going to, you know, raise this K-State ceiling just that much more this season in volleyball.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Refill the Bill. Talking about Bill Snyder Family Stadium, the first official home game, 33 days away there for K-State. But first, they're going to have to take care of Stanford and Arlington. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden for the Purple Project Podcast there. Talking about a little bit of volleyball, and now we're going to switch back over to football. Here in yesterday, as we're recording this podcast, open practice went down at the Bill yesterday. And, well, obviously I did not attend. I was out of town, so I was not able to make it out there. But it was a decent turnout for the practice, obviously. And obviously there's a couple, doing double duty here. And seeing, yeah, pulling up my other tab. Okay, so obviously, practice offensively yesterday. Found a couple of things interesting. We've already talked about, or Alex, anyways, talked about Deuce Vaughn already being a beast. Well, turns out he and Malik Nose were working as punt returners with Phillip Brooks yesterday. And if you already got Phillip Brooks, is already on the all Big 12 preseason team already as a specialist there. So when you add these two, that's just a triple threat in the punt return game. And we know how K-State knows how to operate when it comes to special teams as well. And then Will Howard got some snaps yesterday. Will Howard completed a nice throw there. There as well. And Will Howard, obviously, he's been more talked about getting a few more snaps. We've talked about this, Alex, this summer. Will Howard possibly getting mixing up the snaps with Skylar Thompson. Obviously, Skylar Thompson with the season-ending injury yesterday. So Will Howard getting a much, much closer look. And obviously, he's bulked up a little bit. So we'll see if that any of that experience coming into this year will pay off. That's going to be huge. If Will Howard, Alex, and I'm going to actually start with him before transferring over to the defensive side, because he seems to get a lot of buzz, and rightfully so, obviously trying to hold off the, let me get my depth chart out here real
Jake
quick.
Jake Rubley.
Yes, Jake Rubley. And also in there, Jaren Lewis, as well, crowded backfield in the quarterback position, as well as Will Howard, who obviously got thrown in the fire last year. And we talked about this over and over again. But again, Will Howard can take the next step forward in his progression. He and Skylar Thompson, they're going to be something to be dealt with this year. So what are your thoughts so far? I don't know how much. Obviously, you're not in Manhattan, so what are just your overall thoughts, if anything, if you seen some film yesterday or not? But what are just your general thoughts on Will Howard? Can he learn from his mistakes last year? I mean, there's going to be some growing pains, but obviously, he needs to take that step forward if he's going to be the man when Skylar leaves eventually at the end of the year. Graduates, but Will Howard, Alex, what are your thoughts on so far his progression, and what are your thoughts about yesterday's practice?
Yeah, well, you know, obviously, you mentioned it, not Manhattan, you know, can't see, you know, those things up close, but definitely stay, you know, plugged into what's going on there, and then kind of, you know, some videos that go on for practice, as well as kind of the K-State insiders and kind of, you know, what they're seeing and what they're hearing about K-State. And with Will Howard, I think that I'm gonna use a baseball analogy here, because someone mentioned this and it kind of made me think of Will Howard a little bit, the K-State situation. And they were talking about how when you're bringing a rookie up, you know, you call someone up from AAA, and, you know, it's a star-studded prospect, it's a big prospect. You call them up, and if you can put them in the 7 hole, in the 8 hole, and they're on a winning team, they don't have to carry the team. They don't have the pressure that comes of being, you know, the big superstar. They usually succeed. And it's easier for them to build a foundation as a young player, and then they can grow and evolve into that superstar that can be your 3-hitter, that can be your 4-hitter for a good team. 1, 2, 3 years, whatever it might be. And I didn't even know that, you know, watching watching baseball like me, that is the best, the most successful way to build up a young baseball player, especially in a long baseball season, because when you bring a rookie in and you just throw him in the 3-hole, you throw him in the 4-hole, it's usually not going to work. You know, usually the MLB pitchers will be able to outsmart them, and they'll go into big funks, and it can hurt their confidence, and it can really be detrimental to them. I think we saw that with Will Howard. We saw him last year get thrown into the fire, and the truth of the matter is eventually he was going to get figured out because he wasn't ready ultimately for that moment. He got thrown in as the starting quarterback of a team that was off to a really good start, and he just couldn't sustain it, and he got on a cold streak, and he could not right that ship because he had no help. He had no supporting cast, and he was batting in the 3-hole. He was batting in the 4-hole for K-State, being the quarterback leading them during that crazy, crazy COVID season. So, you know, I think that's why we didn't see a great Will Howard this year. We're seeing something, I think, a lot different. Number one, Will Howard went through a bunch of growing pains last year, obviously, when he was the starter for K-State as a freshman. And now, you jump to this year, which is his sophomore year, or I guess it's his redo freshman year, I guess would be the right way because of COVID. But you jump to this year, and he doesn't have the same pressure, Eddie. You know, he comes in, Skylar's the man. Skylar's the guy. He's leading this team. He's the QB. All Will Howard has to do, he's been the quarterback before. He doesn't have to worry about that. He just sits back. He just learns. He just gets better from what he did, did last year. And there's a lot less pressure. And I think what you're seeing is Will Howard actually playing more up to his potential because of it. You know, he is flourishing better in this role. And ultimately, I think that that's going to lead to a better Will Howard this year, because I've mentioned it in past podcasts. I fully believe we will see Will Howard on the football field. Now, that doesn't mean that he's, you know, going to be the starting quarterback. No, that's not at all what I'm saying. This is Skyler's team. This is Skyler's team, and it's going to be unless he gets hurt. Mm-hmm. But you're going to see Will Howard, in my opinion. We'll see when the season begins. But in my opinion, we're going to see Will Howard on the field at times. And I think we're going to see a better Will Howard. I think we're going to see a Will Howard that's going to be quicker. He's going to be able to run the ball better. I think he'll be able to make better reads. And I think his passing game is going to be a lot better, because we know he's got a huge arm. He has got a huge arm. What killed him was really accuracy. He really struggled with accuracy. He really struggled, read defenses. And, you know, these are all things that I think that he'll be better in, especially, or areas that he'll be better in. Especially when you look at it, it's like he doesn't have the pressure. He doesn't have to go out and run this offense. He may get thrown in certain packages. And when that happens, it's going to be unpredictable. Defenses aren't going to exactly know what they're looking for. Will Howard's going to have more confidence. And I think that you'll see him succeed. So I fully expect him to be part of the offense. I fully expect we'll see a better version of Will Howard. And I think that's why we're seeing a better Will Howard. I think he's a lot better quarterback because of what happened last year and because of the fact that he doesn't have the same amount of pressure this year. So I'm excited about it. I'm excited to see what K-State has in Will Howard. I still believe Jake Rubley is the quarterback of the future for the team. But he's clearly not going to be there this year based on everything that we've heard. And Will Howard is sure turning heads. So, and he continued to do that at the practice last Saturday. Takeaways from the practice, Eddie, you know, I don't know how much you really can glean from a 45-minute practice, open practice. Number one, you know, I don't think Chris Klein is going to show much of anything with people watching. I think more than anything, it's, you know, to get the fan involvement, around the team and let them get a glimpse. I don't think K-State really jumped into any drills that were too technical or too detail oriented. Cause like I said, I don't think they wanted to give anything away, that could tip the cap to an opponent, or something like that. But I definitely think they're encouraging signs based on, what I heard you talk about the punt returners. K-State was doing some interesting drills out there. They actually had a drill where the coaching staff was trying to distract the punt returners by throwing hula hoops at them. So, as a punt returner, there's a lot of things going on. You're trying to catch a football. You've got blockers flying by. You've got guys about to tackle you. How do you prepare for that? Well, let's throw some hula hoops at them in practice and get them used to the distractions that go on. So, that was a pretty cool to see that drill that they do. That was a little bit of insight. Ultimately, I just don't know how much you really can glean from it, aside from the fact that you mentioned, well, Howard made some nice plays. The defensive backs made some nice plays as well. And, you know, we'll talk about them here in the coming weeks. But that group looks like it could be a group that could be improved for K-State, which would be great. I know that Kelis Robinette said two off-the-radar guys that impressed him was Landry Weber at receiver and Amaris Brown at nickelback. So those are a couple guys to kind of keep your eye on those names as the season rolls around. But, all in all, I think more than anything, it was just an opportunity to get the fans out to the stadium, get them to see to see that football team in action and get them excited about this season that's coming up. And I'll just kind of round it out with this, talking about the season, Eddie, before we jump here into the defense. And I think this is part of the reason why we've seen K-State do a couple of these open practices. We need football more than ever, man. We need football more than ever right now. People need it so bad after what happened last season, after everything that's gone on, with everything that's going on. It's needed. It's needed. And so it's an opportunity for people to get out there and to see the football team up close. And look, you know, I'll be honest, Eddie, you know, K-State's struggling. They're struggling to sell tickets right now. They're struggling to sell football tickets right now. Particularly with student section, particularly with the students. And it's, I know that they've got a big old campaign to refill the bill.
Yep.
That they're doing right now to try to get people to buy tickets. And that's, you know, regular people, students, whoever it might be. And, you know, but I just urge people, pack the bill. Pack the bill. We really, really need football right now. And we need the support of the K-State Nation around this football team. So I just urge people to do it. And, you know, John Kurtz mentioned this, and, you know, this goes worst case scenario, but it's also the truth. I mean, it's partially reality. This could be the last year K-State plays in a Power 5 conference. Hopefully it's not, but it could be. This could be the last opportunity you get to see K-State against powers like Texas, powers like Oklahoma, the rivalry of Farmageddon, the rivalry of the Sunflower Showdown. This could be the last year. You can't just assume that that's going to be there the next year. Come out and support this team and watch something, because next thing you know, it could be gone. And you'll never get to see it again. And you'll regret not taking advantage of the season. So we need this football season more than ever. This open practice, which was the second one, was a great opportunity to get fans out in the stadium and try to drive up some excitement, enthusiasm. And I just urge people to jump on board. Just jump on board. Because I think Eddie, I really think people are going to regret it if they don't. I understand that, you know, COVID is definitely part of the reason for, you know, the lack of the numbers and fill-in seats and things like that. But, you know, we got to support this football team. We got to support this football team. And quite frankly, Eddie, it's more than just a football season, because, you know, K-State's going out there this year, and they need to make an impression. They also need to make an impression on the country and the nation that this is a viable program and a viable football team and things like that. And I know I'm veering off kind of to the right a little bit of what we were talking about, but I just want to get that plug out there, because it's the truth. As much as we don't want to talk about those things, it's the truth. And that fan backing is just so dang important this year. And so I just hope fans can come out, can support this team. You know, I think that this is to put a bow on it, I just think this is K-State's, this is another way for them to try to drum up some fan excitement, open up some practices, let some fans come out, see this team up close, get them excited about football. You know, it's less than a month away. Absolutely. And so, hopefully, they enjoyed what they saw last Saturday, and hopefully K-State will do more, because I do think that it's a great opportunity for fans to be able to see. People love training camp. You look at training camp around the NFL and all the fans that pile in to watch those teams practice. You know, give people some opportunities to watch K-State practice. You know, get a little more up close and personal to the team than they may be able to at a football game. So I just think that it's a good idea. I like that K-State's doing it. I hope they keep doing it. And hopefully players keep showing off their skills and talents. And, you know, people can see what players like Will Howard are doing in practice and guys like Landry Weber are doing in practice.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Days, the corner of this podcast, episode 59 of Trophy. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, Stanford, down there at Jerry World. A huge opening game for K-State, like we've been kind of promoting and talking about. And I've been on that same campaign throughout the summer about getting out to the football game, even though I did not get out to do having other obligations. But still, I mean, yeah, this is big, this is important. And for one, I'm gonna add this in here real quick. Obviously September 11th, 6 o'clock, just after 6 o'clock Central Time kick, Southern Illinois, the first official home and home game for K-State. That is Refill the Bell. And also Frontline Workers Appreciation Night with Extra Yard for Teachers. That's a big night right there. And we definitely would love to see K-State Nation rise up. And that's discouraging to even hear that. Obviously, the whole COVID issue, I brought that up late last week on last edition of the podcast, but last time I heard, I think somebody told me I'm not going to name the person, but somebody told me that tickets were at $10 for this opener game. Now, saying that, it could change, obviously, but at the moment, the tickets are $10, but they could be possibly more than that, depending on where you guys sit at. And that's also discouraging for number two, to even hear the student section, or you want to call it ICAT, back in
the... Student passes, man.
Student passes, you mean, not getting grabbed up either. And we've talked about that in the past on this podcast about how a full stadium in a student section, more importantly, needs to be filled up. That's a big advantage for K-State, especially with the big-time home games that you have here this year, like an OU, like an Iowa State, a TCU, which is that's a homecoming game, late October there. West Virginia coming back into Manhattan. Baylor, I just named off the home schedule, the rest of the home schedule, with the exception of Nevada, obviously, September 18th. But yeah, that's some big games right there, and even to hear that, that's kind of, that is very discouraging, to be bluntly honest there. So, especially from the coming from the student side, I mean, 4-6, obviously, and I probably think we're kind of getting sidetracked, but hey, we're going to roll with it anyways. But 4-6, that has something probably to do with it, maybe a little bit of that as well. And that I keep referring, going back to this first game right here. And even Gene Taylor said that, went back to listen to one of the PowerCat podcasts that Fitz does. Again, shout out Fitz. They do a good job with that. And even Gene Taylor said it. I mean, we have to get off to a good start. If we can get beat Stanford, then we're going to have great interest, and we're going to have fans get excited, get pumped up for the rest of the season. You know what I'm talking about. And to of note, though, to kind of offset the people are not buying tickets right now, but the, I guess, the tailgating pregame section has been sold out. That was from Gene Taylor's words on that podcast. So that's at least as good. That's at least as good. That's now, can everyone else? now I'm talking to y'all, K-State Nation, get on board. And this Stanford game, it all ties back in together with the Stanford game here coming up. Obviously, you have a great alumni base down in Texas. We already touched about that this summer on the podcast. It's going to be big. You lose that game, man.
That's going to be a blow.
It's going to be another big blow, another big setback for this fan base. And we need Manhattan, Kansas, the Little Apple, needs this football program and basketball too. But that's a whole other podcast for down the road there. So we're going to push them aside. But football, the moneymaker. We've discussed
this
on this podcast when we first started the podcast. It's the moneymaker. And if you're obviously Gene Taylor news on the college football playoff committee is big. It's big for this university. That's step number one. Okay, that's good for Gene Taylor personally and the university. Number two, can you have, with Texas out the door, OU out the door, can you have a successful football team? That's next. That's next on the list there. 4-6 ain't going to cut it. We know that. We definitely know that. That's just no excuse there. Chris Klieman, he knows what we don't need to tell him what's important. But obviously, you have all his promotions going here. Nevada, Fort Riley Day, the 18th. Oklahoma, that's the K-State Athletics Hall of Fame weekend. That's going to be big there for this university. Iowa State's Harley Day. TCU's the homecoming game on October 30th. And then you go down here all the way to Baylor for Senior Day, November 20th. But yeah, this is big. So that's not what you want to hear. If you're a K-State fan, trying to have interest in going into the game. But yeah, this is also a good set tone setter here. Southern Illinois, yes, we have the big game with Stanford in a couple weeks. We know that. But back here in Manhattan, Kansas, here in Kansas, Southern Illinois. I mean, yes, they're not a big name program, but still, though. I mean, 6 o'clock kickoff.
Huh? Home opener.
Yeah, home opener. Official home opener. You got to come out. You got to come out and support a team. But I can't do nothing. Me and Alex can't do nothing if K-State goes down there to Stanford and lays an egg. 11 o'clock kick. I can't do nothing about that. So it's all on Chris Klieman, his coaching staff from Van Malone, Courtney Messingham, Joe Klanderman, the seniors, Noah Johnson, Skylar Thompson. Skylar Thompson's pumped up for this season on defense. Jerron McPherson. They know what they got to do. They got to be better. And so that's a little that's a little discouraging to hear all that now. But, I mean, we had a couple weeks.
I was done.
You go ahead.
You were okay. I was just saying, you just hit it. I mean, you nailed it. We're just talking about Stanford. It's another reason why this game is just so big, because you're right. If you win that game, you know, we've broken down in past podcasts the X's and O's of, hey, you know, if K-State loses to Stanford, man, they could start the season, 2-4. You know, it's possible. Or, hell, if things go bad enough, maybe even 1-5, because Nevada's a good football team. Yep. Because of the way K-State's Big 12 schedule opens, like, that Stanford game's a big game. So we've talked about it from an X's and O's standpoint and, like, from a schedule standpoint. But, hell, to step back, from a fan interest standpoint, it's a big game. If K-State can go to Jerry World, which I do think K-State will have a good showing there.
I think so too.
Yeah, they've got the fan base down there. People are going to want to travel down to Jerry World. I'm not worried about that game. I think the fan interest will be fine there. But if you can win that game, and you can beat Stanford, and you can kind of have like a tone setter, kind of like K-State did when they went down to Mississippi State and won that game a couple years ago, Chris Klieman's first year.
If you can
do something like that, that will drum up excitement in the base, and it will fill the bill. It will fill the bill. That will indeed do it. If you go out coming off of this 4-6 season and with COVID still going on, and you lay an egg against Stanford, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to say, why am I going to take the risk of going to a football game to watch a team that sucks? Like, that's what a lot of people are going to say in their head. Not saying that K-State sucks, but that's what people are going to say in their head. And it's you're not going to have fan interest. And we already talked about coming into the season that this is a huge season for K-State because of just how bad the sports year was last year, that this is a big season for K-State football. This is a big season for Chris Klieman. There's a lot of pressure on this season for the football program and for Chris Klieman. Then you throw the conference realignment wrinkles in it. I can't think of a season that's been as big for K-State in the past, because you're not just worried about, you're not worried just about, hey, we need to bounce back from this crummy year we had. Hey, we need to take advantage of Skylar Thompson on his senior year. Hey, we need to win again because that was a disappointing season. Now you have the pressure of saying, hey, we need to go out and we need to make a good impression to the country to show that Manhattan is on the forefront of college football and that we have a really good football program and that conferences should want this football program. And that's just another layer. And, hey, we have the fan base. And, hey, we have the fan interest. And you have to show it on TV screens and on streaming apps. And you got to do it all season long. So it just makes the season that much more important, that much more critical. And it all starts with that Stanford game. It all starts with that game. Because if you can win that game, you can drum up that excitement. The football team's feeling good. The fans are feeling good. And that's big. That would be really, really big. But man, if you lose that game, oh man, that's hard. I mean, that's tough. You know, that's tough. You know, K-State just can't have another season like they did last year. I mean, they just can't. You know, they've got to be able to fill the bill. They've got to be able to drum up excitement. They've got to put good product on the field. And you're right. That falls at the feet of Chris Klieman. Getting this team ready. Putting a product on the field that's going to make fans want to show up. And make fans want to keep coming back to see that product. That is the feat of Chris Klieman. And, you know, hey, that's a lot of pressure. Yeah, it's a lot of pressure. But you know what? You're the head football coach of a Power 5 school. So, you know, so it goes, you know. Chris Klieman didn't shy away from things like that. I don't think he shied away from it. I think he knows. He knows how big the season is. He knows how big that Stanford game is. He knows it. And I think he embraces it as well. Just based on the what we know of Chris Klieman, but it all starts at Stanford. That really is a game changer when you look at it from a schedule perspective of what K-State can do. We look at it from a fan base perspective. Look at it from a national perspective. Because let's not forget, yeah, that game's been played at 11 a.m. on FS1, but it is still the kickoff classic, which people watch every year, and it is still in Jerry World. And it is still on national TV, and people are still going to tune in and watch that game.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
go make an impression. Go out there, make an impression, put good products in the field.
Yeah, and also before I transfer into some individual news here on the football side, that 11 o'clock from a couple of sources have become the new kind of the primetime-ish game. I mean, 11 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Obviously, when you go back in the day, the big game, the big rivalry games, you go Ohio State, Michigan, the big 12 rivalry back in the day, Oklahoma, yep. Nebraska, those type of games, Florida State, yeah, yep, OU Texas, yep, perfect example right there. So you're gonna have people tuning in. No doubt about that. 11 a.m. kick. That doesn't mean you sleep in. Obviously, K State's playing. You better get up and be ready for this game. Obviously, so. One news to make of note, obviously, Alex kind of talked about that earlier. This is the Purple Project Podcast, episode 59 of the show. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden here. Obviously, Alex already mentioned it. Landry Weber was big, along with Amaris Brown, who stood out as well. One name of note here, obviously, injuries. We talked about injuries a little bit slightly tonight on the podcast. TJ Smith, which we're going to talk about him more next week. He was out, and he was balling when he first was on the field for K-State, and I really was impressed what he was able to do. Unfortunately, ACL knocked him out of the season there. He was full participant in that practice, and the bad news of all that, obviously, Sebastian Taylor, who is coming off a still recovering off a torn ACL that he suffered last year's game, the season finale against Texas there. Apparently, he needs a little bit more time before he's ready to catch passes in live 11-11 action. So, we're already talking about a shaky receiving core. That's not really good. Now, obviously, Landry Weber stepping up, that's big. So, you're gonna have to get a next man up attitude. They're from a shaky receiving core, obviously. They're going to need to be more consistent. We already talked about that there as well. But, yeah, all K-State Nation hopes that Taylor's ready to go in a couple weeks. That's a big hit already there if Taylor's not able to be on the field there for Skylar Thompson against Stanford there. That's huge there on that front.
The good news is K-State has more depth at that receiver position this year than last year. So, exactly. Hopefully, that depth will allow them to absorb some of those blows a little bit easier, and that offense can still move and be able to work at that receiver position.
Exactly. Bam. Alex, you nailed it right on the head. We talked about that. If you missed out on that coverage, that me and Alex talked about the receivers, go back a couple episodes, checked it out for you. It's on the feed, the Purple Project Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. Definitely missed out on any other episodes. It's good information, along with, obviously, guys that are much closer to the team, like a Fitz, John Kurtz, Kellis Robinette, and others out there that are more closer to the team as well. Definitely go check everyone else out, including our podcast as well, from the little bit of a the next street over, if you will, coverage of the K-State team. So definitely, we're going to have that at our disposal. We're going to do another reminder, like last year, after every K-State game, we will have raw coverage, raw reaction, win or loss. Hopefully, in a couple weeks, we'll be talking about a K-State win against Stanford.
That's right. Eddie, I just can't wait to do our first preview show. I'm just ready to preview a football game.
yep, that is coming up very shortly. We're also going to do, Alex, we're going to do our schedule predictions.
That's
as
right.
Well.
That's also one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah, I like that from last year, so we're going to do that again here. I'm going to have to set that up. So definitely a lot of more excitement here on the podcast coming up. We don't want to miss it. And we talked about the defense, finally. We talked about a whole bunch of offense on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And now the defensive side of the ball here on Trophy here. Obviously, Alex mentioned at the top of the podcast, the weakness. Could be the weakness of this team. High praises from sources, which I'm going to call it, for Deuce Vaughn, Skylar Thompson, and then the defense. Everyone question marking this defense. And last year, finishing eighth in the conference in total defense. It's not going to cut it. Yeah. It's not going to get it done. You finish back there with Texas Tech and KU, dead last, obviously. But K-State, I mean, obviously last year, I think the defensive coordinator swap there. I mean, K-State, actually, they started very well
on the defensive side. They had their moments.
They had their moments. Obviously, fell behind the Oklahoma game, but the second half, they turned that thing completely around there. And then Texas Tech, they made stops there. TCU, they were knocked. They're lights out. They're lights out there. Obviously, a low light Texas. You can't give up 60-plus points and expect to win a football game. That's unacceptable. You just can't. You just can't give. You can't give an opposition every time they get the ball or go down the field and score. You can't do that. No, especially at Bill Snyder Famous at home. You get your butts kicked at home. There's no excuse for that. So you're coming off of an ass kicking literally against Texas. Now you're gonna go against Stanford. I mean, the Stanford and Texas, the differences, offensive differences, I haven't seen much, well, obviously, because we're about to find out in a couple of weeks, but Stanford, they're a well-balanced team in the past, and they rely on the running game now. Lately, in the last couple of years, they've been kind of a more passing team, a little bit on the passing side, but they did have Christian McCaffrey, who's from there.
Yep.
As well, just a little NFC Division South update there, unnecessary, but I'm gonna put that out anyways. But yeah,
well, hey, look, that's what they did. David Shaw, he ran that offense around them, and he's still there, you know. So he definitely will take some of those concepts probably, and that's what you can expect to see.
Yep, that is right. That is right. K-State, obviously, when you look at sacks here. If I'm reading this right now, obviously, in interceptions, 10 games. You look at the secondary, 7 picks, if that number is correct now. I'll probably have to go back and double-check that. They're obviously their sacks. Their K-State is 4th there. And then sacks against K-State is 2nd in, in that territory as well. But, yes, let's just start with the... kind of with the defensive line here, and we'll see how much time we get here. The defensive line, obviously, with the big miss, obviously. Not just you, Alex. You mentioned White Hooper, obviously, a big miss. That's going to be a big hole to fill, obviously. But let's not forget about the other component in there as well. Drew Wiley.
He was humongous.
Last year. Had a great season last year. So that's. I'm going to pile on top of that. That's another loss that you're going to have to fill.
That's a great point, Eddie. Those were the two best defensive linemen for K-State last year.
Yep. But you have Eli Huckins, that's back. Khalid Duke and Bronson Matt, the return of Bronson Massey over there on the ends. You have Tommy Horn, a transfer in the Drew Wiley spot now. And when you go back to, and the name that keeps resurfacing here in Manhattan, that he's been getting highly talked about. I would put him with the Keenan Gardner hype train here, is a guy named Nate Matlack. His name got popped up, mentioned a few times from the open practice as well. He had an impressive showing as well. He's been kind of the one of the young leaders in that freshman class from last year, getting everybody focused and ready to go. So I'm really intrigued by Nate Matlack. So I'm ready to see him on the field. I'm ready to see him in game like situations there as well. Jalen Pickle, we saw him a few times last year. He played a lot against the OU game in that Oklahoma game as well as Baylor as well. Kamari Gainis, and we saw a lot of these guys last year.
We saw him too.
Yep, Spencer Trussell, we saw him get a lot of reps as well. So Chris Kleiman, what he talked about is building that depth, and that's very important for this defensive line. Now, obviously, when you look at going back to the potential starters here, obviously, you circle the ends: Bronson Massey, Khalid Duke. They're gonna have to be something. If K-State, obviously, the worries of K-State is this defense. And if there's one section I don't want to piss anybody off, but I'm going to say it anyways. There's one section ability that you have to be concerned about, obviously. Not much. I want to say it's a concern, but it's a worrisome, is the front. Everything starts up front. Defensive line, got to put pressure on the court, these quarterbacks, these pass-happy quarterbacks in the Big 12 that we've seen, forever now. You got it all starts up front, helps out with the secondary, which I believe, in my opinion, I think the secondary, if all healthy now, obviously I'm jumping the gun a little bit. Julius Brents was not on part of the open practice yesterday, so for reasons I don't know, obviously. So, yeah, you're going to have to look for John Kurtz or Fitz or any for that information. But this defensive line, they're going to have to step up the pressure a little bit. Obviously, Wiley, Hubert, they're gone. Somebody else has to step up. We've heard the Khalid Duke hype train. We talked about him a lot last year. Bronson Massey, in my opinion, had a quiet year last year, even though he made plays as well. So, Alex, this defensive line, it all starts up front, obviously. You hear this time and time again. You got to stop the run. But more importantly, in this Big 12, at least what it is this year anyways, with OU Texas out the door, you got to put pressure. You got to put pressure on the quarterback. That's just plain and simple. And you have a chance to help out the back end of your – everybody knows you help out the back end by putting a lot of pressure on these talented quarterbacks in the Big 12. Rattler, Brock Purdy, just to name off a couple. Spencer Sanders, another one. So Jerry Diggie, another one. So I'm going to reel off these. There's talented quarterbacks out here in this Big 12, and Chris Klieman has learned the hard way. So it's going to be interesting to see how this group gels. I'm interested to see how this group gels. Obviously, the depth is there because we've talked about some of these guys last year's podcast. So Alex, what are your general thoughts on this D-line? And obviously, you mentioned already the weakness coming from this defense. What are your thoughts coming in here in a couple weeks with Stanford?
Yeah, you know, and another name I tell people to keep an eye on is Eli Huggins there on the defensive line as well, you know, going into his senior season. But with the defense, you mentioned it, you know, there's question marks in the defense. In my opinion, there are many more question marks with the defense than there is the offense. Despite how much the offense struggled last year, this year, you know, you're getting Skylar back. You know, you've got one of the best running backs in probably college football at this point in Deuce Vaughn coming back. And you've got an offensive line that you feel like is going to be a lot better. So I think that when you look at the offense, there aren't a ton of question marks. There aren't the question marks with it this year as there was last year, in my opinion. I think that you know, there's reason to be optimistic about what K-State can do from an offensive standpoint. But you look at them defensively, there's a lot more questions on the defensive side of the ball than there are the offensive side of the ball. And the truth of the matter was, last year, K-State had moments where they were really good defensively, but they also had moments where they were really bad defensively. When you have coaches coming out saying that K-State's running plain defenses and that K-State's running predictable defenses, and
that's bad. That's bad already.
Yeah, and that that they can predict what they're going to do, and that they're pretty simple.
That's like
all these different things. Like, that's not good. Like
that's like
good.
The offense, and that's like Will Howard. That's like Will Sorry to cut in here. That's like Will Howard. Like we talked about earlier. That's like figuring out Will Howard.
Yeah, and that you know what that's what happened with that K-State defense, particularly after that Oklahoma State game when. They had a great game, and then they just totally fell apart after that. After that game, but when you have coaches talking about that, like K-State defense, you clearly got something to prove going into the next season. And as I mentioned, there were also coaches that were concerned about those losses that you mentioned. Wyatt Huber was the one that was really talked about. But you bring up a great point in Drew Wiley, because Chris Klieman mentioned it. He was probably the MVP of the team last year, is what Chris Klieman said a while ago, and it's hard to argue with that. He was absolutely an integral part of what K-State was doing. So you lose your two best defensive linemen. There are questions. There are questions with that defensive front. And everything starts there. Everything starts with that front seven. And with Kate, I'm with you. I agree. I think the secondary is going to be the strength of this defense. I think the linebackers look pretty darn shaky I think with the defensive line, I think that could be the second best unit. Granted, I don't know how high of a bar the linebackers will really set, but I do think the defensive line could be the second best unit on this team. I just think there's some question marks. You know, how's K-State going to be able to, number one, get more creative in what they do defensively? How can you get more creative to keep offenses on their toes a little bit and not be predictable and, you know, throw some exotic schemes at them? K-State needs to throw some exotic stuff at teams up front to kind of keep them on their toes, to kind of mix them up. We saw them do that at times last year and do it successfully, but we also saw K-State get burned at other times as well when they were just too, their defensive schemes were just too simple and K-State wasn't getting to the quarterback. So you've got to find a way to get to the quarterback, because if you can get to the quarterback, Eddie, we know this, it affects every level of your defense. And the Big 12, which is a pass-happy league, it's important to get to the quarterback. So, you know, we talked about that defensive line. You listed off a lot of those important names. And you know, but for me, all of those guys are going to play a role. And everyone has to take advantage when they've got a one-on-one matchup. And they've got to be able to win that matchup and collapse the pocket and get pressure on the quarterback. But it all starts with you mentioned it, with Bronson Massey and Khalid Duke. You know, they're going to have to get to the QB. I mean, they're going to have to win those matchups on the edges, and they're going to have to give those guys inside opportunities to win some one-on-ones and maybe collapse the pocket in the middle. Because if they aren't, you know, getting pressure from those ends, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for K-State. It's going to be tough for them to stop the run. It's going to be a little tough for them to stop the pass. It's really going to affect them in a lot of different ways. So I really think it starts with Bronson Massey and Khalid Duke and what they can do and their performance. And if they're playing well, I think that you may see this defense play well. And if they're not playing well, I think that you might see the defense struggle. I really think that they all play really, really big parts on this team, because you're filling some really big shoes. And, you know, on that note, you know, as well, the defense, the middle of that line, they just need to be stout, too. They need to be stout. They can't let teams gash them. They can't let teams, you know, gash them up the gut, big run after big run, and be able to extend drives. You know, K-State needs to be able to get off the field quickly, be able to get that defense a rest. And if you can't stop the run, that's really going to kill you. I know it's a pass-happy league, but you got to be able to stop that run as well. So, you know, we'll see what K-State can do up the middle. You mentioned some really intriguing names that K-State fans keep an eye on, and we'll see what type of impact those guys can have up front. You mentioned the transfer as well, but yeah, you know I do think that there are some guys. I mentioned Eli Huggins, you know he's a senior coming back. You also mentioned some of those other names, and so if K-State can just get some stout play in the middle, they can get Khalid Duke playing to the level that we know he can play. They can get Bronson Massey playing to the level that we know he can play. If they can get those things going, that can be a really formidable defensive line. It really can. But can you get all those things going? That's going to be the question with them. I don't necessarily think it's a lack of talent. I think K-State's got talent on that defensive line. You just got to get it all clicking and all connecting. And we just didn't see that last year. You know, we saw flashes. We saw flashes of Khalid Duke here and there. We saw Bronson Massey some here, some there. But you mentioned it. He had a pretty quiet season. So the K-State players that were the most consistent on that defensive line last year were Drew Wiley and Wyatt Huber. And how do you make up for it? So maybe Khalid Duke does step up, Eddie. Maybe he does step up, and he plays to the level that you and I were just, and we were just drooling over Khalid Duke at this time last year about what he could do for K-State, and it didn't really happen. It didn't really happen what you and I expected to happen. So can we see it? Can we see him take that step to what you and I were expecting going into last season? I think that that's intriguing, and I wouldn't rule it out, but K-State's going to need it. They're going to need those guys to play better this season than they did last year, they're going to have to up their game for K-State on that defensive line, because everything starts up front. And if you can stop that run and you can make quarterback move, man, that's going to help. That's going to help a potentially vulnerable defense a lot. And if you can't do those things, some offenses might be able to have their way. So I just think there's a lot of question marks for the defensive line, kind of like there was that K-State offensive line last year going into the season. And so, you know, we'll just see if they can kind of can make it up. We'll see if some guys can pop up, Eddie, that you and I maybe aren't even thinking about right now. That's also a possibility.
It's always a possibility.
You know, maybe there's a guy that comes in and he flourishes and you and I aren't looking for. Fans aren't looking for. And he can make an impact on the team. So, but I think it starts with Cody Duke and Bronson Massey. I just think they need to up that production for K-State to have a formidable defensive line.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Alex Ayton in San Diego, California. Eddie Greer here. Manhattan, Kansas, the Purple Project Podcast, episode 59, continues here for just a little bit longer here on the Sunday night, August 8th, while we're recording this podcast, NFL Hall of Fame weekend. I'm just going to throw this in here real quick before we continue the K-State discussion here for a few more minutes. NFL started this past week with their Hall of Fame game, Cowboys and Steelers. So coming off of the Olympic 2 weeks busyness, craziness that went down there, getting back in the flow with football. So definitely the preseason actually starts this week as well. So kind of just to a little bit of going off the railroad tracks here a little bit there. So a lot of football, obviously, with the Chiefs and everything else. So I just want to throw that in there. So definitely football, NFL, college, Definitely picking up and excited for it. Well, not excited for is this K-State defense, which finished that transition. That was funny. K-State 8th, like I talked about a while ago, gave up a total of 322 points overall total throughout the whole COVID year last year. Average of 32 points a game. Again, that is not winning football. That's not winning football right there. I mean, you can probably, I'm not going to use this as an excuse, but obviously the pass happy offense in this league, but still though, I mean, that's a lot. And including, let's not forget, I hate to bring this up, this game back up. Already mentioned Texas. We can't, and we kind of slightly talked about the cancellation of, if you guys don't have enough players, if we don't have enough players to play with the COVID situation, Iowa State, that game still, they should not have played that game. That was bad as well. That was horrible. But rushing yards.
That was awful.
Yep. Rushing yards average on the ground. Opponent average 177 yards on the ground. Or opponents average 177 on the ground. And then the K-State pass defense wasn't terrible. 250 average of 253 yards. That might be, I mean, compared to some of these, 248 Texas Tech. I'm looking at here, 254 for 254 yards for Texas defense last year. That was inconsistent themselves on their own hands there. So K-State, a lot of work to do on that front. Again, we'll talk about the secondary next because I'm got my calendar pulled up here. Alex mentioned already. Previewing Stanford, that is going to come as I'm looking at this now. I will put this on my calendar for you and for Alex and for you guys, K-State Nation. That preview, obviously, the 4th is the Stanford game. The 29th we're looking at will be the preview of that. So I will mark it after the end of this podcast. Over 27, I'm working backwards here because today is the 8th, the second Sunday of the month. 22nd will be the prediction show there with the schedule and everything else. So exciting 2 weeks there. And obviously next week we will talk, I'm going to move into linebackers in secondary with that as well. So that's going to be next week's podcast, linebackers in the secondary. there, the 22nd, will be the predictions, like we did last year, of where will K-State will think we'll finish. And then, of course, the 29th will be, obviously, keep this in mind, that I'll have a daily, hopefully every day during football season. I'll add a small preview on Fridays for that game, but obviously, but we're going to have the full preview of the Stanford game on the 29th, and again, right after the game. Well, not necessarily after the game, but probably more than likely Saturday night, we will have the reaction of the K-State-Stanford game. So, K-State Nation, you're going to be in good hands here. A lot of good content coming your way, including a preview and post Stanford. So, there you go, Alex.
That's right. That's right. Get ready for it. You know, it's going to be an exciting time. Football's right around the corner, everybody. So, it's exciting. It's exciting that that we are almost here. We are almost here. The football team is practicing. Summer is winding down, which is kind of sad because you always love the summer. But man, I'm ready. I'm ready for some football, Eddie. I'm ready to. I'm ready to get that game, that last game that K-State played behind us, that last season behind us. Think about this: the last time, Eddie, that K-State football team took the field, they gave up 69 points and lost by 38 points at home. You can't tell me that they're not chomping at the bit to get on the field and play a game so they can forget the heck about that game. Because they've had to sit on that all season long. They've had to sit on that game all season long. So I am assuming that they are just as ready as we are for this football season to come and for them to be able to turn the page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to know K-State's ready. I know Skylar Thompson is, just by the way that he's been handling himself throughout media days in this offseason. He's ready to get back after it. For sure, that does leave a taste in your mouth there. 69 points, that definitely, all caps, ain't going to win you a football game. So definitely, you hope to see something a lot different down in Arlington. That's all I have to say when it comes to September 4th there. Against Stanford here, Eddie Greer, Alexander for the Purple Project Podcast. Just a few more minutes on tonight's show. Hope you guys have enjoyed the summer coverage here on Triple P. And I just got this from Kevin Cullis-Robinette, just reading his article here from yesterday, obviously. And I'm going to end the K-State section of the podcast for today with this, with the transfers, right? Julius Brent, talked about him a little bit. From what they're saying, he transferred. For those of you who don't know, he did transfer from Iowa. So, yes. And he
big get for Coach Klein.
That's huge. That's a step right there for that defense, getting somebody like that, especially from the Big Ten, a quality player like that. That's big. But anyways, he was an observer yesterday. He was in uniform, but he did. From what Killis reported, he did look healthy, so he did not. There's no serious injury or anything about that. So Julius Brents, definitely, he's going to be a part of that secondary, which again, like you talked about, and we have the same opinion that I think the secondary is going to be the best. I think we think the best on this position on this team, and that's huge given the receivers that you see on the weekly basis in the Big 12, so keep that in mind. Another defensive lineman that we did not mention that, Alex, you said it just like a few moments ago, that we're not talking about, that I think could be an impact. Well, Timmy Horn, K-State coaches raved about this Charlotte transfer all summer long, and he rotated he spent most of the time with the second string all day, behind Eli Huggins. And here's another name in here that I did not mention in here. Obviously, I got to get re-familiarized with everybody with K-State's roster this year. But Tyrone Tolini, it was on first team. So that's a name that we have not mentioned on the Purple Project Podcast. So that's a name K-State fans need to get. We will learn as well. But that's
Hey, Eddie, there's going to be names that are going to pop up, you know. That's the beauty of every season, you know, is you think that you know that you know what team's going to be, and somebody is going to come out of the woodwork that no one's expecting and make a big impact. And maybe he's the guy.
Yeah, maybe. Daniel Imadebebe. We talked about him, the anticipation of this another transfer, replacing basically Brawley Moore from last year. Obviously, we've heard some great praises from the coaching staff from him. Obviously, Courtney Messingham, obviously, we criticized him on his podcast, the beginning of this podcast anyways, and basically throughout the summer. Courtney Messingham, he's going to have to, he said he's eager to use him in many different ways. I want to see it. I want to see it.
Exactly.
I want to see it. All this talking.
Let's see it.
I'm a person that, hey, I mean, you can talk and back it up, that's fine. But if you can talk all this and don't back it up, you got issues. And
yeah.
Courtney Messingham, obviously, with him coaching receivers now, we talked about that all summer, Alex. You know, I want to see it. I want to see you put him. That, again, I'm going to put this in the Kansas City Chiefs analogy and Atlanta Falcons analogy at that, right? Travis Kelce, one of the best tight ends in the NFL. And now I'm going to put in Atlanta's rookie, Kyle Pitts, who's been obviously hyped. He's lived up to it so far, which is awesome. And we have an offensive coach with Arthur Smith, right? So he loves his tight ends. He loves his tight ends, moves them around, slot, get those mismatches. So that's Travis Kelce as well. So when it comes to Imadebebe, Messingham, he better talk the talk and walk the walk. Obviously, you have Skylar Thompson back. So, and again, what if Brawley Moore was healthy for an entire, or not Brawley Moore, Skylar Thompson was healthy for a whole year? I mean, Brawley Moore was nicked up as well, but what if those two were healthy the entire year? In a perfect world, what if both of those, Thompson and Moore, were healthy all year? They could have done some big things there. So this is interesting coming out of Messingham's mouth here that, you know, we're eager to use in many different ways. Well, I want to see it. I want to see it in Stanford, and I want to see it now. Don't wait in the middle of the year. Don't wait to lose the opener or whatever like last year. I want to see it now. All this talking, the talking stops September 4th. So I want to see it. K-State fans want to see it.
I'll be honest with you, period, with Courtney Messingham, I want to see anything that he does with Samantha, because his offenses have not been terribly impressive. I think that most of the K-State fan base would agree with that, or majority of them have not been impressed. And I mentioned this early in the summer, I think late in the spring. I think it was late in the spring. But this is it. This is it for Courtney Messingham, in my opinion. Either he steps up with the offense and he backs up what he's saying, or he's gone. Because the job that he did offensively last year was completely inexcusable. And I know that is harsh and sounds harsh, and I get it. And I also understand that he was down players and it made his job more difficult. But he was not putting players in their best positions to succeed last year. No. I've mentioned that many, many times on the podcast. And I mentioned it because that K-State offense was just so stagnant and so predictable. And he did the same things over and over again and was way too conservative in his play calling. And it really hurt K-State offensively. And unfortunately, Courtney Messingham has kind of gotten that reputation because that's what he's done. Even when they were an 8-win team, he was, you know, you were having those types of issues as well from time to time. So for Courtney Messingham, look, you know, it's time to step up and have the K-State offense play with the big boys of the Big 12, or you need to go and someone needs to step in that will back up the talk and help help develop a K-State offense that will play with the powers of these other schools. Granted, who the hell knows how much longer we'll be playing in a high-powered offense, Big Old, but you get the point. Point is, you need to be able to match these teams and these firepower. And the fact of the matter is, K-State just hasn't been able to do that from an offensive standpoint, and part of it is because these players have just not been put in the position to succeed. And you're right. We've heard Courtney Messingham talk about the offense before and say things before, and I'm not saying that he's a bad offensive coach. I'm not saying that at all. It would have been tough. It would have been tough for anyone to drop offensive game plans with what K-State had last year. particularly the back half of the year. But there were opportunities where it was just clear that he was in over his skis there, and it wasn't happening. So he's right. You know, K-State should use Matabebe in a lot of different ways and be able to use him in mismatches. And Skyler is an experienced quarterback and can take advantage of those mismatches when K-State can do it. But I'll believe it when I see it, because he doesn't have a track record of doing that. That's the thing. He doesn't have a track record of doing that. So
nope.
You're right, Eddie. No, well, you know, we wanted to hold it to the middle of the season. No. Pull out. You don't want to show everything in your first game against Stanford.
Right. You don't want to show everything.
You want to go win that game. Like, you want to go win that game. You want to, we've mentioned it, that's a humongous game. You want to go out and do what you can to win that game. So it doesn't mean that you have to show every damn play that you have. No, you don't have to do that. But you need to pull some tricks out. You need to pull some things out. And you need to go make sure that you win that game and back up what you're saying. So I'm with you. And, you know, for Courtney Messingham, I think we will see him do a little more of that, because I think he knows that this is it. You know, he got a little bit of a demotion, but it was kind of felt like it could be.
I'll call it that.
Well, I mean, look, it kind of felt like demotion for both coaches there. It really was that Chris Kleiman wasn't happy with either one in their role, so he swapped them around. I think that tells you everything you need to know about what he thinks about those guys. Get this fixed. It needs to be fixed, so we're going to put you in new spots. And if it doesn't work, then you're going to go. And I think that's probably how it's going to be, and I think he knows that. So, I think that you will see him get a little more creative with that team. And who knows? Maybe it will be a blessing, Eddie. Maybe it will be a blessing for the K-State receivers and those K-State pass catchers to be able to have a new voice. Some new blood, and someone maybe's got a little bit of a fire under their ass, literally, to get going with the offense. But you're right, Eddie. We need to see it. We need to see it. Come September 4th, we need to see it. See it on the football field there at AT&T Stadium.
Yep, that is right. That's right. Even though Tate Shabasha Taylor is. We'll just put it 50-50, so you still have other guys that can be difference makers for that K-State offense. Here, just real quick here, the rest of the transfers here that some of you guys need to get familiar with. Obviously, there's actually two names on here that have been in the discussion all summer long. But first off, real quick, Sincere Mason. He transferred from Kennesaw State. It looks like he's from the Killis Robinette article that I read he's on track to be McPherson's backup at strong safety. Eric Munoz, Utah. He transferred from Utah State. He's going to be helping out. We're talking about the linebackers next week. He's going to be one of the reserves linebackers, it looks like. Yesterday, he was working with the third-string defense. Reggie Stubblefield, what a summer this individual has had. Obviously, if you have listened to the dailies, if you have not, you can go back again. It's in the archives. Go back, download it, check it out. Chose K-State and then backed out due to whatever happened. And then everything cleared back up, so he was able to come back to K-State there. But obviously, what a roller coaster of a summer for this young man. Reggie Stubblefield transferred from Perryview A&M there. He's going to be part of that K-State secondary. Again, I'm telling you, all these names, this secondary is going, if they can play to their potential, they're going to be something they're going to be something to wreck with, deal with this year for Joe Klineman's defense. Cade Warner, we mentioned him slightly. We talked about him a few weeks back on Triple P. He transferred from Nebraska at the receiver position as well, but according to Kellis Robinette, again, Kellis is much more closer to the team. John Kurtz fits, again. If you're wanting to create more K-State, they got it for you. Those guys got it. Cade Warner, very quiet throughout most of the open practice. Again, I was not there to attend, so obviously I do. That's 100% trust, obviously, in Kellis and what he's talking about. So that's interesting there on that. And Russ Yeast, a part, another name in the K-State secondary. He appears on track to start right alongside McPherson. They are obviously Ross Elder. Let me go back here before I check myself here. Let me check myself here real quick here. I got the depth chart pulled up here. He's going to be in. He's right now on track to start ahead of Ross Elder at that free safety spot there. So Russ Yeast, I cannot talk here late in the podcast. He's going to be paired to start there. And he transferred from Louisville. So Louisville, Alex, to kind of to wrap up the podcast.
That was another big pickup.
Yeah. Iowa.
K-State did a real nice job with the transfers this last offseason. I just want to say that with the transfer portal in general. They really embraced it.
Yep, yep. So Iowa, Louisville, Perryville, A&M. So Kleiman, who encouraged Bruce Weber to use the transfer portal. So that's huge gets overall. That's not even including Imada Bebe and a few others I just rattled off there to kind of in the podcast on that note. In a side note, K-State Soccer did have their media day on Friday as well. So I wanted to throw that in there. But definitely, Alex, transfers, some of them getting work, some of them are being particularly quiet for right now. But yeah, that's something to keep an eye on going forward here into the upcoming weeks leading up to Stanford.
And the truth of the matter is that there's going to be injuries as well. And, you know, it's just how the NFL, this is not the NFL. It's how football goes, what I was trying to say. It happens in the NFL, it happens in college, it happens in high school. It happens everywhere in football. Don't know why I said NFL. It happens in football, though. I mean, this is the truth. Injuries. And what were K-State's biggest issues last year? They lacked really depth and athleticism. You know, they didn't have the athletes that other Big 12 schools had. They didn't have the depth that other Big 12 schools had. That was something that they needed to improve on. They went out and they did a really nice job. And I said this immediately after in the winter. I said, you know, K-State, look at this. I mean, they're embracing that transfer portal. They're going out and they're getting guys who will provide depth and will provide more athleticism for them. And that's exactly, you know, what they've done. It's not something that you can turn, you know, you can turn around overnight. You know, there's no doubt that K-State still lacks some depth and lacks some athleticism, but it does seem like they've got some bigger, stronger, faster guys, and they've got some more depth to withstand some of these injuries. So you mentioned it. Some of these transfers are going to come in here, and they're going to be immediate impact. They're going to play against Stanford. They're going to take the field when that ball kicks off, and they're going to go. And then there's other ones that are going to, be maybe just rotational guys that, may come in for bigger roles if and when there's injuries. And instead of K-State having to throw a freshman in, they could throw a transfer in. And it will be easier, you know, for K-State because they'll have that depth. So, they'll be able to throw with someone more seasoned in there, someone more polished. And also, just the more you can rotate, Eddie, I don't know if you remember this, but I'm sure you do, Chris Kleiman's first year, K-State actually did have a decent amount of depth, and they almost rotated in like hockey lines on defense sometimes, and they just constantly kept those guys fresh, so they didn't weren't getting too many snaps, so they were fresh in the fourth quarter instead of just being completely run down. And we saw the same philosophy with the running back group, you know, running three different running backs out there constantly, and those running backs are fresh in the fourth quarter. So when you have that depth, you can do that, and hopefully K-State can get back to that on both sides of the football. And you know, these transfers that K-State have really give them an opportunity to do that. And I think Chris Kleiman's also on to something here too, because you know, we haven't seen him recruit at the level that we were necessarily hoping for, and I think that he was probably expecting to do a little bit more on the recruiting trail as well. But with the new transfer portal, and I hate it, I'll be honest, I hate the portal. I'm not a fan, but that's okay. We'll get beyond that. I'm not going to get it. It is what it is. You need to embrace it because it is part of it. That's what Coach Klein told Bruce. You can hate it all you want, but you got to embrace it because it is the future, and it is. The truth of the matter is, that is probably K-State's best tool, Eddie, to be able to get immediate turnarounds in football, and I think it really could benefit them. You may be able to scoop some guys up out of the transfer portal that you wouldn't be able to recruit because they just weren't able to make it happen at a big school for one reason or another, and players are transferring quicker than kingdom come now with the transfer portal. So it's a lot easier to scoop a guy up. So K-State should embrace that because it's going to give them an opportunity to get to the level that they want to get quicker than other avenues. And should K-State, does that mean K-State should ditch going out and getting high school guys? No, I don't think that either. Because there's going to be more teams that are living in the recruitment transfer portal, which may mean that there might be more high school guys available that K-State can go out and get. And so I definitely think that you want to go that avenue as well. But if you're K-State, you've got to embrace the portal. You know, the change is happening. Teams are embracing it. You've got to be willing to embrace it as well. We're seeing that with Coach Klieman, and hopefully they can come in and they can help K-State and make a positive impact for them this year.
That is correct. Yeah, that's for sure. So getting ourselves familiarized with these transfers, that they could definitely be a big difference maker on offense or defense side of the ball. So a lot more to come on that front. Just kind of to put a bookend on yesterday's open practice here in Manhattan, Kansas. The Sandstorm is playing in the background, which means, folks, another edition of the Purple Project Podcast has come to a close, the weekly edition. Oh, which, by the way, could either come out episode 59 tomorrow night or Tuesday. So I think the schedule is Tuesday. So definitely be on the lookout for it on one of those days. But I think Tuesday is where episode 59 will come out. Great, great episode tonight. Great discussion all the way around. Alex, final thoughts before we close this out.
Final thoughts. Well, I just want to give a quick, I don't mean to be all Mr. Debbie Downer over here, but I just want to, I don't want to, condolence isn't the right word, but I really feel for Briley Moore. He's out for the season with a torn ACL with the Titans, and also feel for Wyatt Hubert. He's out for the year with a torn pec for the Bengals.
Yeah, I heard that one. I did not hear about the Briley Moore one. Oh my
god. Yeah,
goodness.
Briley Moore tore his ACL at training camp here this last week, and then the week prior, Wyatt Hubert tore his pec. So they're both out for the year. We had a podcast where we had dedicated to K-State players in the NFL. And,
yep.
Who could make an impact? Well, this year will be neither one of them, unfortunately. But hopefully both of them can make full recoveries and come back next year and be able to make an impact and make K-State proud. But just a bummer for those guys. They were really K-State's probably top two guys from an NFL standpoint, and they're going to miss the season. So I just hope that they can heal up and be able to hit the field there in 2022 and make an impact. Really just the final thing, I'll say what I said at the beginning of the show, Eddie. K-State fans, you're going to regret it if you don't get behind this team, go pack the bill. Look, we don't know how many more chances we're going to get to see this team playing against these schools. Take advantage of it. Go watch them. Go enjoy them. This is going to be a great, it's going to be a good year, I hope. Maybe. We'll see. I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yep, there it is.
But either way, pack the bill. Pack the bill. You don't know how many more chances you'll get to see this team playing Power 5 football, so go watch them.
That is right. That is correct. Yeah, definitely. I was going to say it, but Alex said it for me anyways, and that is a perfect way to end episode 59 of the Purple Project Podcast weekly edition here. And Alex, we have a few more weeks to campaign it there before.
That's
so,
right.
Illinois.
We're helping them, Eddie. They need to sign us on to their marketing team so we can get a little slice of their little dough for helping them refill the bill.
Yep, that is right. That's 35 days away. Southern Illinois comes to Manhattan. Meanwhile, 26 days. When the time the podcast rolls out, it'll be 24 when it comes out. But definitely the countdown is on. That's a perfect way to send us out this week. Linebackers, secondary. We'll continue that talk next week, along with other news that pops up throughout the week for Kansas State Athletics. Folks, it's getting closer and closer. Alex Aiden, Eddie Greer III. Go Cats. We will talk to you next week.
Get it wherever podcasts are found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and more. We'll talk to you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.